Welcome to the Cold Hard Truth on Sports.
I apologize in advance if I am out of line here.
Brace yourselves, boys. We're going in.
Am I hallucinating here? Just what in the hell do you think you're doing?
I'm not reading, I'm just looking at the picture.
Welcome to the Cold Hard Truth on Sports.
And welcome everybody to the special edition of the Cold Hard Truth on Sports. I am your host, Matthew Long. Here with my co-host today, James Bell. Boxing. How are you doing today?
Just approaching closer to the college football playoff national championship game, but anticipating this matchup between these two teams.
I know yesterday media day was 2.5, almost 3 hours there. And we were able to talk to all the players that they had available for the most part, get some information from them. A lot of it, you have to do a lot of reading between the lines and understanding their meaning by what they're saying, because they're not going to say a whole bunch, especially with Gaskin, like offensive, defensive coordinators. Those are my favorite groups to have, along with the head coach, because they don't really plan out what they're going to say. They just have an understanding that they can't give you too much.
Right.
So we'll explain today for everybody what we drew from media day yesterday. We'll get into the game preview and also a little bit on how some of these teams got here. And that'll kind of be how they got here. It'll be also in the synopsis of breaking down our predictions for the game. So it's a special episode, a little bit shorter than our normal episodes on Tuesday. We will have a show on Tuesday. But this is a special edition we wanted to do here live from Atlanta. We're at the Sheraton Hotel, the home of media days. You can hear the wonderful elevator music in the background. So that's provided complimentary of the Sheraton Hotel.
Of course, an elevator music. Sorry, of course.
It's like if a hippie had an elevator, this is what they would play.
Pretty much.
Hippie elevator.
Yes, basically. Hippie elevator. Yeah.
So yesterday, again, go over to the social media, at the CHT on sport, at the CFB on sports. James, you put it over on yours.
I am going to basically share it on my page here the next few years. So,
I mean the content that you put on your page,
yeah.
Your Twitter?
Yeah.
James' Twitter handle is JBZ.
4-2-0-3.
4-2-0-3, yeah.
Yeah.
And then mine is Matt Long Sports. I got a lot of content over on Snapchat and on Instagram as well. But definitely Twitter, Facebook are areas you want to go check out a lot of the content and stuff that we have up over there. So the first team that rolled out was Georgia. They are the top seed coming into this. They're considered the home team. They were a 3 seed in the playoff. They're coming off of a high-scoring win over the Oklahoma Sooners. James, what did you grasp from Georgia yesterday when we were able to talk?
Well, a couple of things that, I was able to get a few of the players like Sony Michel and Juan Smith at media day on Saturday was that they kind of tried, they were having their best efforts trying to get past that Rose Bowl victory, as exciting as it was, getting that 54-48 double overtime victory over Oklahoma. They wanted to, get past that game and then prepare for Alabama because it was like a different approach to, facing some real fast on Georgia before Georgia was able to make their second half adjustments to an Alabama team that basically, you know, has a defense that's consistently been the best in the nation, specifically in the rushing game, and an offense that is a conservative approach that runs the ball and doesn't make mistakes at all. So it's like you got to go from week to week. And so that's what I got out of, you know, Sony Michel and particularly Raquan Smith, the star linebacker, All-American for Georgia.
You know, it's kind of an odd thing. You know, Sony Michel had 3 touchdowns and the Rose Bowl victory.
Mm-hmm.
And the run that ultimately sealed the victory for Georgia in that game. So obviously media is going to be drawn to him. What was kind of unnerving in a sense to me was how much of a lack of attention media was giving to Nick Chubb.
Mm-hmm.
The setup was essentially you had Kirby Smart in the
mm-hmm.
middle to his right with Sonny Michel,
so
then Nick Chubb, then Quan Smith, and then the defense.
Yeah.
That's the whole setup to the right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, there's a whole bunch of media around Kirby Smart the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Sony Michel was pretty busy at the beginning and pretty much had somewhat of a crowd the entire time in front of him. Nick Chubb had a few people there at the beginning, but it seemed like half the time that we were there, and in this hour, so for about a half hour, he kind of had stragglers the entire time, which is odd. I think because he's one of the top running back prospects come out of this draft. Some people think that he may be a better prospect than Todd Gurley in some ways. I don't agree with that, but they tout him like that. And just having that alone, we're a month away from the combine. We're 2 months, over 2 months away from the NFL draft. And at this point, for media not to take advantage of asking about how does this cap his career here, because media, they take a lot of events like this that are special and try to use those soundbites, that information, to build up for future articles. So if you're building a profile for something you're going to do in the future, so even if you don't ultimately write too much or quote what he's saying, it's something you're going to build up for the future. But he was the man at the beginning of the year. And now at the end of the year, all the attention is being paid to Sony Michel. Now, I'm not going to say that there's some sort of anything going on in that locker room because they all seem very tight.
Right.
And I don't want media to construe that.
Right.
And they're all very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you talked to them a little bit about that, didn't you, Matt?
Yeah. I mean, there was short little talk out there. So, but, you know, we really didn't have that much time. As like, you know, dealing with the Georgia players that were there. But, yeah, to see not that many people around Nick Chubb, considering that, you know, he's about to transition over to the National Football League, I was kind of surprised to see, specifically, you know, going from his previous performance at the Rose Bowl. It wasn't like, you know, Sony Michel was the all-everything, do-everything guy in the Rose Bowl. Nick Chubb was no slouch either. I mean, he also had like 145 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns at that Rose Bowl game. So it wasn't like he, you know, had a very bad game and ended up being benched for the rest of the game in double overtime. It was just that, you know, Sony Michel basically had the biggest story because of not only the touchdown that won the game, but the, you know, the two... Uh, the uh, previous long runs that he had before, and also the fumble that he had that ended up being returned for a touchdown that could have cost Georgia the game at the Rose Bowl. So, I mean, a lot of attention went to Sonny Michel over at Media Day, but that still doesn't, you know, take away what's going to happen, what may happen upcoming in this national championship game against Alabama. So they're sure to use both Sonny Michel and Nick Chubb in this game. That's going to be part of their game plan on Monday night in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So looking forward to is how they are going to run their offense against Alabama's defense. We saw Alabama's performance in the Sugar Bowl, and we saw that there was a stark difference in how they performed in the Sugar Bowl in comparison to their last game in the regular season against Auburn, there where, you know, they didn't have all of their players back on defense. They weren't necessarily able to execute on offense either, but specifically the defense from that Auburn game to the Clemson game was just, it just looked like a completely different team. And I think that was because, you know, of the depth they were able to have and the players that were able to come back for that particular game.
Now, I know the interesting part about these two teams, and talked a little bit more excited with the Alabama side about some of this comparison, or rather familiarity with these two teams, Kirby Smart clearly being the previous defensive coordinator at Alabama, and then Pruitt on the other side, he's been through Georgia before. Tons of recruiting. So they get a lot of familiarity between recruiting these players, familiarity between common employers, working together. So there's a lot to draw from here. It's friends against friends, or at least a significant amount of familiarity between these two teams. Now, again, it comes down to who you ask, how much that familiarity is playing into the game. But I think some of that is a factor here. And Kirby Smart would be up against statistical odds here because none of Saban's former assistants have ever beat it. So that is something that would be rare and unique for Kirby Smart to do. Now he did highlight a little on during media days that, you know, they're here in Georgia. It's essentially a home game. Them being also the home team. I know when we cover boxing, we talk, the boxers sometimes say being a home team in a championship fight, being the home fighter, sometimes there's some difficulty because there's a lot more distraction than a normal other fight that's within their state.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked Chubb, Nick Chubb about it, and he hasn't seen any sort of drawback from it.
Right.
So, again, from sport to sport, football players, I guess, don't feel it as much. The few guys that I talked to on either team. But it's something that maybe, because it's easier with football teams, as funny as it is, 100 and some guys, to isolate from outside environments because they can essentially do a lockdown of the team inside the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that a lot to where they open up ballrooms and stuff like that and have built game room hotels that they don't have. But, so they go all out to make sure that these kids, they these young men stay in an environment that's going to be conducive to them not being drawn away from the game. Kind of like after Georgia beat Clemson, they had an issue with two players getting pulled over. A reserve wide receiver
was arrested for
DUI. Yeah. So again, both players aren't involved in this game. Neither of them are playing. No need to bring them up. But I think for Georgia to come out victorious in this game, based on what I've seen this season. Now, Alabama. We had Alabama for an hour. We got them for the full hour. So we actually were able to have a little bit more time with them. If you go over on social media, you can see on posted up on the Facebook page on the CHT on Sports Facebook page. The Alabama players were playing PlayStation. PlayStation came in this year and actually had set up there where they had six monitors, NBA 2K on one, Madden, NBA 2K on two of them, Madden on two of them, and then they had FIFA on the other two. So they were all crowded around, hitting sticks, playing the game. So it was kind of a fun atmosphere, and I liked that better because last year in that area they just had more tables for media to sit down. So it really wasn't too much of an advantage.
Yeah, they kind of made it more conducive for the players in this sense, in comparison to last year. And I think, like you were mentioning, they were wanted to make it to where while they're basking in what's happening over the course of this week, that it doesn't weigh too much.
Yeah.
You did mention Georgia in reference to, this kind of being like a clean game for them, with them being in Athens, which is like, a few hours, a couple hours away drive from here. But they were able to, perform here in the SEC Championship game. It's pretty much going to be like a repeat of that as far as like the atmosphere is concerned. So that's why I don't think it's, that much of a burden. And like you mentioned, with these teams, having like 100 players, up to 100 players on the roster, it's not like, everything is weighed on one particular person like it is with boxing. When you have, for example, with the Terrence Crawford that has his wife in Nebraska, or like a, Ricky Hatton in the past or Anthony Joshua in the UK, where it's just one person, fighting in the UK with a whole bunch of fans behind him. So he has all of that pressure because he has all that attention. All the attention goes to that one person instead of the attention going to, it could be 5, it could be 10, it could be 20 players. So that's the thing that, Georgia, over the course of this weekend, leading up to the national championship game that they have to deal with, but it seems like it's easier for them to deal with that here in the coming days.
Now, we got to spend, like I said, we got to spend more time with Alabama than we did with Georgia. From my end, I was able to draw quite a bit from it, and again, more of my questions were kind of looking at how the teams are going to deal with. Most of my questions that I ask are, how are the teams dealing or planning for one another for the game? What concepts are they looking at here? And I know that they're not going to give me too much as far as, matchups, what you see here. A lot of times, with people, if you've never been to these events or been near the scrums, you kind of want to take note, not just as a player who's around you, but also which media people are around you too, because there are some media people that ask really good questions and quality football questions. But there are a lot of people that come in and ask very typical vanilla fluff questions that really you're not drawing anything from at all. I don't think the fans are getting something from it. I think they're just, as a writer, they feel that it's helping them find a couple of different adjectives. You know, it's just changing the words on the paper. It's not really changing the content or the meaning. So, you know, finding those people and listen to their questions as well. I know one thing we do, I know a lot of people are like, well, if you're at Nick Saban, how do you know what Pruitt's talking about? A couple of things, we have these earbuds that we can listen to as channels, so we can listen to every question, every response. But even a bigger part is we get transcripts of all the questions and all the answers from all the players and coaches that are selected. Now, all the players are there, and you can have access to all the players and coaches. You just have to pull them aside, walk up to them, mm-hmm. you know, asking questions. Now, we only did content, from what I know, we only did content with coaches and players. I did talk to quite a few players and coaches as well. So, again, they have certain players and coaches set up for Valerie. Mm-hmm. So, what did you draw from Alabama's media day versus what did you draw from it?
Well, with Alabama's media day, what I focused on is, you know, various questions on how they approached this particular national championship game. Many of the college football fans know that, you know, we've had the college football playoff for 4 years now, and Alabama has been part of it for all 4 years. And, you know, this national championship will be their third consecutive national championship game. But last year, they, you know, lost closely to Clemson over at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa. So my approach with most of the players that were there, particularly with Jalen Hurts and their and Rashawn Evans that was there at the podiums for media day, was that, you know, how they approached this particular national championship game, particularly with Jalen Hurts, as a lot of people were talking about how that game ended last year with Clemson, ended up winning 35-31, and had like a lasting picture of him walking off of the field at Raymond James Stadium. So you'll have to get, I wanted to get the response from that, and, you know, how he would feel if he was able to finish this particular game winning the national championship. You'll be able to see that particular interview on the CHTN Sports Facebook page, and also check it out on DCHTN on Sports through Instagram. And I also have that on my Instagram page as well, JBZ42003. So that's what I got out of Jalen Hurts when I interviewed him. With Rashawn Evans, you have Rashawn Evans there. He's senior. He's been part of their defense, you know, all 4 years. Been part of the college football 4 years. 3 national championship games. So this will be, you know, the last game of his collegiate career. And that, you know, he kind of approaches this game like thinking back that, you know, I've been here 4 years and I've been part of this college football playoff for 4 years, been part of these big games for 4 years. And he just, you know, kind of thought about, like, wow, I've been part of this big stage for all of these years. And so he just wanted to pass down that type of knowledge of being part of big games to, you know, those that are behind them back there in the linebacker core. And that, you know, if he was able to finish his collegiate career with the national championship, mean, it would mean everything to him. You know, there are also, you know, times like you were saying, there's, you know, also people, you know, giving questions that kind of like reached a personal level for some of those players. Yeah. But also, you kind of like had things where, you know, they were trying to have fun.
Weekly, yeah.
You know,
what is it?
They also had, like, you know, questions to loosen them up. But you also had, you know, players like Deshaun Hand approached Rashawn Evans one time and, you know, kind of like asked them, you know, who his favorite teammate was on the team. So, you know, it's kind of like a, you know, a mixture, you know, trying to see what their mind frame is going into this game on Monday, but also seeing the little lighter side from those players and also the coaches as well. We also got that from that hour that we had with the Alabama Crimson Tide, because we actually got a couple of good things with the coaches there for Alabama.
And then I want to welcome everybody in over on Snapchat. You see here, we're in the Sheraton Hotel in Atlanta live for the show today. Also, thank you to all of you listening live over on Blog Talk Radio and the Spreaker app. Free to download the Spreaker app. You can listen to it over there, as well as YouTube and SoundCloud, where you can also get the podcasted versions of today's show. Also, the website, of course, thechtonsports.com. Up left-hand corner, clicking on the listen link, and it'll get you right over there. So, I think one of the interesting things, like I said, with Alabama, I was able to draw more from them, I think, as far as what they were looking at for this game. They bring in an offensive coordinator that has NFL experience and college experience, and he's still kind of stuck to what Nick Saban likes traditionally. What you'll see this year out of Alabama, what we've seen all year, and those of you, some people just watch championship games because they're a bigger deal.
Right.
If you haven't watched Alabama all year, but you did watch them in the championship game last year, this is going to look different than what you've seen last year. They do have talented running backs, although I think Georgia has definitely the edge. I keep saying these two running backs, but in reality, Georgia has...
They have three that they regularly use, but they could use up to four in their roster. So it's kind of like a mirror image of what we're seeing here in this game. It's just that you're going to have to figure out which team will have the big plays, whether it's on defense, whether it's on offense, that'll give them the momentum on Monday night.
Yeah, and with – I asked a question to Pruitt, how he feels that this – if this familiarity would help or hurt them. And he said it could kind of go either way. Generally, they do have their game plan, and they're going to stick to what they do most weeks. But when you could have a tendency in situations where you are so familiar with your competition and the coaching staff on the other side and the kids on the other side that you've recruited, that sometimes there could be that tendency or that door could be there open, even if it's not gone through that. You could end up overthinking a situation, you know, trying to over-strategize. Well, I know Kirby Smart likes to do this. This may still rank in his playbook, but I learned from what he likes to do. This looks like that situation. Maybe he does or doesn't do it. Maybe you overthink it and you leave yourself open to, you know, a 65-yard touchdown. So it's kind of those things where you could, where too much information ends up being a bad thing. But on the other end, Alabama's offensive coordinator didn't really give me anything on that but a big smile. And kind of moved on from there. I got two big smiles out of that. I asked him that, and then I asked him because essentially when we look at this playoff, we thought, again, I talked about this on Tuesday. LeVon Kirkland was on the show, talked about that in Kevin Press as well. The big thing that we kind of grew from it is Alabama, the 4 seed, was more so treated like a number 1 seed coming into the tournament because they got a bye week, whereas all the other teams had to play in to this game. You know, Clemson had to beat Miami to get in. Georgia had to beat Auburn.
Oklahoma had to beat TCU.
Exactly. So it's another matchup where all three of those teams had to beat teams that they'd already played. So it makes the game tremendously more difficult by having to play a team for the second time because now you've learned things, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, with the exception of Clemson, you know, went through a schedule where they played the likes of
They didn't have Miami.
They had Louisville on the schedule. They had to play Florida State. We saw the always close game. And one of their out-of-conference games was against Auburn in the beginning of the season. Part of the home-and-home series that they had. So they had, like, a kind of schedule that...
And hats off to Auburn and Clemson home-and-home.
Yeah.
I'll hit on that.
Yeah. And so with Clemson, you know, going up against Miami, you know, the ACC championship game, the ACC Big 12 championship game, and Georgia Auburn, the second time during the season for the SEC championship, that kind of, you know, put a little bit out of them. But with Alabama in this particular case, with them not playing in the SEC championship game, they had a week of rest. And one of the stories over the course of the season was the depth on defense for them, and that they didn't really have that much, you know, in the front seven, and also with the secondary. But with this, you know, with the extra week, and then the break before going into January 1st, so they had more than a month off before the Sugar Bowl game against Clemson, and that benefited them tremendously. Just being real, that benefited them tremendously approaching that game against Clemson, and we saw what they were able to do to Clemson's offense, where Clemson just could not do anything anywhere, not through the run game, not through the passing game, not anything. And I think that, you know, kind of like helps them out here going into this game on Monday, even though one of their key players will be here against Georgia, as, you know, Anthony Jennings near the end of that game against Clemson, injured his leg, so he won't be suited up on Monday night. But, you know, it was like completely different than, you know, last year where Ohio State was able to get in. Even though they didn't win the Big Ten. But, you know, Alabama, they took advantage of this opportunity to be part of the college football playoff, and now they have a chance to be, once again, national championships in their second college football playoff national championship. And their dynasty may continue for yet another year.
And it's very interesting going over, going through this, these players and coaches and in this environment talking about, as much as some people would try to turn to the past, talk about past games, both teams are tremendously focused on this game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, without a question, I think that Georgia has some glaring disadvantages in this game, even though personnel and staff-wise, they stack up really well. One thing is, Alabama had the last game that they played, the regular season game Alabama played, was on November 24th. That means they had 37 days off before they had to play Clemson.
Right.
You gave Nick Saban 37 days to prepare for Clemson and rest his players. Now, that's only another 8 days of rest. Eight more days. But 8 more days is huge when it comes to impact sports like this. I mean, I think Ron Kirkland spent at least 5 minutes of our segment with him that was just specifically him talking about how important rest is, especially in a playoff environment, because everything changes. You can't necessarily – I've talked to players that said you can't coast through a season. You'll get hurt with football. You can get hurt, but essentially in a way that in the playoffs, you exert yourself so much more. Like, you give it all during the season, but you're trying to it may be the last thing. That's why we end up seeing more injuries and stuff like that. Like Jim.
Right.
We see them going on. By the way, he's having a knee surgery. So ahead of he'll be going into the NFL draft. And there's been quite a few of them, I feel like, that have come out lately. They end up having surgery just before the draft. It seems to be kind of trendy, but we won't get into that right now. The other thing being that I see is a bit of a strength on their end is Alabama has tape on Georgia against Auburn, against Clemson, and against Auburn twice. Now, Auburn's team is beaten. So this again.
You talking about reference to Georgia over the course of this season.
Yeah, yeah. So
their big games were against Auburn. They did, special things.
Well, yeah, but the reason I'm saying it's more of a draw because Alabama, when you can look at like opponents, it helps you in your process of strategizing, breaking down game film. You know how your players stack up against them.
Mm-hmm.
So although Georgia and Alabama haven't played a head-to-head this year, they have seen them play Auburn twice and Clemson once. So although Clemson, so they know how they prepared for Clemson. So I can see some of what they do here, they can prepare in a similar way that they did for Clemson, because one of the big advantages, I know people say that Brom, for Georgia, he's a pro style, he's a passer. He's really athletic and he has great mobility and he can scramble well. So I think even more than being a runner, but he's a quality scrambler that can get yards, I think that's a bit more dangerous than being a runner. Because his passing skills are much better than Jalen Hurts. And I think that he has a bit, I would tip the hat to them as far as it comes to quarterback and running back, slightly towards Georgia on those scales. As far as wideout, I think with Ridley on the other side for Alabama, I think Alabama has a little bit more edge on the outside at wide receiver.
Than Georgia. I'm not sure about that and finish. I mean, Calvin Ridley is a very, very good player, but the way that Alabama's offense runs is not like it kind of
like it doesn't run through the receiver.
It doesn't run through the receivers, but it's like it's more of a quarterback dependent type of walk. You may see like a little bit of play action where they'll be utilized really, so to speak. But over the course of this year, we haven't seen Calvin Ridley like stand out like receivers in the past. Of course, you had Julio Jones past.
But this is a championship game, and if you draw back to previous championship games for Alabama, and Alabama's whole mindset is pound it, pass. And I think what we'll see with Alabama here, and I think Brian DeBall, offensive coordinator for Alabama, I think he's going to come out here and he realizes that Georgia's going to be looking and keying in on the run. I think Alabama's going to try to test Georgia on the second and third level early. They're going to look to utilize Ridley early, and they're going to look to utilize more pro tiles, slanting and stuff that worked last year under Saban, or under Lane Kiffin. Some shorter, more timed routes, short two, three steps, or what it would be a one step plant throw in a pistol or shotgun formation. So I think that's what they're going to look to do that because, and then also Alabama, I think, is going to look to get more involved with a bit more of some screens or utilizing the wide receivers more on the perimeter. Because what that does is it starts to soften up that front seven. Because the linemen for Alabama, they're leaning on these guys all game. But when the defensive linemen are going hard, not getting there, they're trying to go hard, not get there. And when they're so focused on pass rushing, sometimes what that does is law them, you know, in boxing they call it winding the clock, where you get the guy going in a circle, you get him going in a circle, then you change it up. I think what they're doing is essentially winding the clock by doing this, and what that does is open it up for Scarborough or somebody to take it right up the middle and then start pounding it. Now that's drawing the linebackers back in, and it really upsets the balance of the defense for Georgia. See, that's the thing is that Oklahoma was really successful at, upsetting the balance, because they don't have a pounding rusher. They have, you know, James, he's a speed guy, he's really shifty, he's smaller, so he can hide behind, his blockers. But Oklahoma opens stuff up in space. I could see Alabama at the beginning, even though I'm willing to bet, if you're looking at prop bets, I'm willing to bet Alabama's first play is a run. Without a question, it'll be a run play. I think everybody's prepared for that to be a run play. But then I would look for three or four consecutive pass plays to kind of switch it up. Because that's the thing is, what great teams do in big situations is able to capitalize on things that are far outside their tendency. It's not about doing stuff that they're not good at. Alabama can do this. Really, it's an amazing wide receiver. That's why I say I give them the edge on talent and of receiving corps to Alabama. But, and again, that's not saying that Georgia doesn't have talented wide receivers, because they do. But I'm just giving Alabama the edge. And I think that they're going to try to open up with a bit more of showing some spread components to a more open, not spread, more open component to their offense that they have the ability to do and they can do well, even though their bread and butter is running the ball. Because that what they'll do is it brings the hands down so they can hit the face. I think that's what they're going to do, is they'll switch it up here in this game to try to take advantage of Georgia early.
Well, I would be interested to see how Alabama is supposed to be in the opening quarter of this game. I mean, we know that they have heavier running backs. Damian Harris a lot. Bob Scarborough has been a full part of their offense. They have freshman Najee Harris there in the backfield as well. But I would like to see how, Jalen Hurts is going to be able to utilize the passing game against this Georgia defense. Over the previous two national championship games that Alabama has been part of, a lot of the big plays in the passing game didn't go to their receiver, it went to their tight end. So they were able to, you know, throw off the coverage or confuse the coverage well enough to have, you know, in the previous 2 years, O.J. Howard either, like, come across the middle or just be, like, wide open on the street route to where, you know, he was able to score. It was against Clemson in those previous 2 years. But, you know, now you have it to where they don't have O.J. Howard anymore. They have, you know, like, redshirt freshman coming in there right now.
But I think that opens them up even more because they know that they doesn't have that player. So I think that's how you can open up the play action earlier.
It is an opportunity to open up play action. But me, in my opinion, I feel that Alabama sticks to what works to a T more than any other team in the country. And the only way that you see something outside of their approach is if they see an opening in coverage or they see an opening in the fourth defensive formation. For example, if they're like in a spread formation and the defensive formation for Georgia doesn't match up, they're going to find that open route as fast as they could and get it going. Specifically with Jalen Hurts, because Hurts, I mean, to me, is not like a quarterback that makes the big play. He makes the right play. And that is like a gift and a curse at times, because sometimes when you see the big play, you're not able to make it because of your ability as a quarterback. Now, I kind of like saw that out of Jalen Hurts in his previous game at the Sugar Bowl against Clemson, where he may have had guys open or he may have had an opportunity to like throw big passes and it wasn't able to complete them because he couldn't make that type of throw. So here against Georgia, I'm looking to see if Jalen Hurts could see those openings in coverage or in the openings in Georgia's defensive formation that they will be able to exploit once the ball is snapped. And if they're able to get that big play and, you know, get big yardage out of that or score a touchdown in front of it.
Now, on the other side, I think, because I said, I think Georgia has a distinct advantage at quarterback. I think, again, Fromm's young. He's a freshman. He'll have some jitters. I would assume so. Even those people that are cool in these situations, first possession, that's why I see probably Georgia's going to come out focused with Chubb, focused with Shell on screen passes, short dump offs, get his confidence up, get him eased into the game. They're not going to push it. Alabama's going to come out liberal with what they're doing on their playbook. I think Georgia, because they have a younger quarterback, is going to come out a bit more conservative, focus more on running and getting Fromm settled in so this way they can get momentum through the game. And basically that's the way that it kind of was in the Rose Bowl, in the double overtime victory there. He was, at the beginning it was kind of like it wasn't really going, so they want to probably get him settled down soon, do some high percentage passes, short, something's going to get, you know, 4 or 5 yards, and then just try to move the chains 3 to 5 yards at a time. This is kind of the goal. The goal on a run play is you want to get 3 to 5 yards because that's either going to set up third and short or you're going to get a first down every time,
mm-hmm.
getting 3 to 5 yards. So they're going to probably, if that's it, and they do that, the hard part is on the Alabama side. If you know this, and this is where Jeremy Pruitt was kind of leaning, if you have a tendency, you know, kind of something, maybe you overthink it. You don't want to get the players, you want to keep them easy thing. Okay, we game plan this, see this before. If you feel this, you want to take advantage of it, but you don't want, again, too much information to be completely an enemy. So it can leave you wide open. You jump a route, it's not there, maybe somebody has a double move, the back, the post route behind. Now to the safety bit on something, that the post route is wide open. So, you know, that those are the kind of the things that can make decision making very difficult, especially when it comes to teams that are so familiar with each other. And but like I said, I think Alabama does have some things to count. Talked to Jeremy Pruitt a little bit about with the linebackers, because they've had some injury there. There's been some turnover at linebacker. Obviously, Jennings is out for this game. He will have knee surgery. He's done for. He will not play. And what they do, what Alabama in their recruiting does, that it's not unique to Alabama, but what they do is it's kind of, I think, in some ways, more of a small school approach to a big school atmosphere. When they recruit, they don't recruit linebackers like to say, okay, you're playing middle linebacker, you're a middle linebacker, we're going to look for a middle linebacker. They recruit guys that can potentially play, especially if they're in a 4-3 formation where they have three backers. They want all their backers to be able to play any of the linebacking positions. And throughout the season, they're giving guys reps at those positions. So this way, we can come upon a situation where Jennings is out. His impact of being out is lessened because of the fact that the guys behind him have had reps at that position. So they move their guys around. This is why we see some of the linebackers and defensive and safeties really when Alabama players go to the next level end up being successful, not always at the particular position that they were at in college.
Well, in reference to that, when you have like a linebacker as part of play those multiple positions, they learn different coverage techniques. They learn different, you know, areas that they have to be at, you know, whether it's a pass play or a run play, so that, like you said, once they do transition over to the NFL, they're able to, you know, make those plays because they're all over the field. And in some cases, they could, you know, depending on their size, they could end up being a safety as well, you know, in college and in the NFL. And that approach kind of, you know, that works for Alabama and how, you know, they're very deep in the linebacker core, but also, you know, a lot of them are very versatile. So if they have that type of versatility where, you know, they could play like at, you know, at the edge linebacker or be a middle linebacker, that it works for them, you know, on both instances. So that's something there that, you know, kind of who it has as an approach with their linebacking core, and it also like helps their, you know, their front four. Now, in reference to this particular game with Georgia, I'm not certain how Georgia's offense is going to approach this game. They do have Sony Michelle and you know, Nick Chubb there that could get the pressure off of Jake Fromm. But you don't want to end up being too predictable in this instance or being too conservative or too safe. One of the things that I saw in the Sugar Bowl with Clemson and Alabama, particularly with Clemson, is that they kind of coached the game conservative against Alabama. They didn't do things to take chances. So it was almost like, okay, yeah, I do have these running plays. I do want to, you know, utilize a running back from a quarterback. But if you have, like, a weakness in Alabama and a lot of times, Alabama's weakness has been the secondary. You try to exploit that and use that against Alabama so that, you know, they'll be on their back foot, so to speak, on defense. So I will see if Georgia is able to use Jake Fromm you know, in order to see if he can get big plays on the edges with Mims out there at receiver, and also, you know, doing screens and things like that to kind of like keep Alabama on their field. They were able to do that in the opening quarter of this game on Monday night. Now, I would say, like, on Monday night, what we have here with Georgia and Alabama, like we've mentioned earlier about this kind of being a master versus apprentice type of matchup with, you know, Nick Saban out there on one side and his former assistant there, Kirby Smart, on the other side. And I think it was, like, you know, mentioned here earlier about, I think it was particularly Kirby Smart, you know, being asked, you know, how it would be to go against his former mentor, so to speak, and I would say, like, what the pressure would be for him to go up against Nick Saban. And we've heard about the, you know, previous times that, you know, Nick Saban has, you know, faced his former assistants. He's pretty much, like, won every time. So, you know, here with this Georgia-Alabama matchup, we're kind of, like, seeing if, you know, Kirby Smart has something up his sleeve that, you know, Nick Saban doesn't know about, or if Nick Saban necessarily teaches Kirby Smart, you know, there. So I'm kind of, like, interested in that, if it's like a, you know, master versus apprentice type of thing, you know, going off the Star Wars theme that happened
the whole,
last couple of weeks.
The whole, I taught you everything you know, but I didn't teach you everything I know.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Yeah. It's exactly like that. Like, I taught you everything you know, but you don't know everything that I know. And so it's like, okay, what does, you know, Nick Saban have for him, you know, particularly on, I would say on offense, that Kirby Smart wasn't aware of, you know, while watching the team when he was at Alabama, because, you know, he was watching, you know, the offense and those scrimmages and those practices. But Nick Saban, you know, utilized the full playbook that he had, you know, alongside his offensive coordinator at the time. And that's something that, you know, I would like to see if, I feel that may be where the big play comes from. Not necessarily from a bust in coverage, so to speak, or a bust in, you know, defensive alignment. It has to be something where, you know, you kind of see yourself, you know, aligned correctly, but it's just a play that you really didn't expect coming out of Alabama. And I would be interested to see if it does happen on Nick Saban's side.
You know, the big thing I kind of keep coming back to here, and I think it's going to be a huge factor. The game planning is going to be interesting. The strategy between familiar folks, you know, thinking and knowing that, you know, it's crossed Kirby Smart's mind that none of Saban's, you know, former assistants have ever beat him. But also, none of his assistants seemingly have gotten the same amount of success as quickly to this level as Kirby Smart had. So, again, it's kind of a question, and kind of before our eyes, we've kind of seen Kirby Smart has been able to do more than the other's assistants have in the past. This may be, we allude to him doing what nobody else has done in that regard as well. But he is coming off a game just a week before. There was a double overtime victory coming from the West Coast. a lot more time, a lot more energy. Any of you, you know, I think about when I travel, even when I'm traveling by myself, let alone if it's with my kids, you know, that is having 2 5-year-olds traveling. It's nerve-wracking because they want to be everywhere but where you are. And there's a lot of people, you know?
Yeah.
So even by yourself, you know, trying to catch a flight, it's either your connecting flight you have to run to at the speed of flash, or it's like, I got to wait 5 hours.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like, why, if I'm going to wait 7 hours in an airport in Atlanta to get to Gainesville or Tampa, I'll just get a car and get there in 6. I'll save myself 2 hours. It's probably cheaper to have a car than the connecting flight. I don't know. It's just, look at a one-way ticket there. It's just,
yeah,
just like, it. You wonder, like, how some of these things are that really relate with how they beat down on your body. Now, I know they compare playing football to car accidents, many car accidents. If you go over to the website, thechtonsports.com, we actually have an article up that I put up over there. I wrote a week and a half ago, because the NFL is investing $100 million into safety and player health, a lot of which is into, all of it either into basically like neuroscience or new technology to help prevent head injuries, to make the game safer.
Mm.
But essentially what they actually use car crash test dummies in those studies, in that research, the best use of the actual equipment for football. It's like simulated car crashes. So, so not only did they have a full game of that, but they also had 2 additional quarters of that. And then they went from the West Coast, which is 3 hours time difference, went through the mountain, they went through the central to get to the east. They got the same 7 days, but they didn't exert the same energy. Again, high scoring affair, double overtime, coming from the West Coast. Georgia has a bit of a deficit in quality rest because they've had to play longer. And again, not to mention, they had to beat Auburn to get to that game. Alabama, again, their last regular season game before they played Clemson was Thanksgiving weekend. They did not play in the month of December. About a week off at the end of November, all of December off, and then played January 1st. That is huge. Where Clemson played the day after Alabama did, and then Clemson played against Alabama. So, I mean, even Clemson going into that game was at a significant disadvantage because they had played their previous game before that, before Alabama. Then they had to go play Miami, a high-energy, up-tempo team, for their championship game before they played Alabama. So every time a team goes on the field, particularly in a championship or playoff atmosphere, there's little layers of that onion that get peeled back and get exposed, and now you are offering up something to your opponent, a wrinkle, a glimpse, a situation that they can now plan for or plan against. And that is, again, the bye weeks are so important. You know, again, they say that, you know, Alabama, like you said, they do what works. And a lot of that is predicated on the offensive line. They have a mobile quarterback, so that's going to free up some of that offensive line. They run a lot, so it's not a lot of guys sitting there time after time being tired, as more tired in pass blocking, because it takes more time and energy to go backwards and side to side and block than just run forward, you know? and plow over somebody. Less energy exerted that way. So pass blocking does take a bit more energy, so they don't do as much of that. So the big thing is, when we're coming down to this, is how do they match up? And again, I just want to just to reset here real quick. Thank you all for listening. I know we have a few callers on the line. We're not going to be taking any calls this week, but Tuesday, if you call in on Tuesday, the regular number 347-237-5539. If you call in on Tuesday, again, thank you everybody over on Snapchat for checking us out today. Me and James here live from the Sheraton Hotel in downtown Atlanta. This is a special episode for the national championship game here on Monday. You can check the Snapchat out. It's at Matt Long Sports. All the show-related stuff is at the CHTN Sports. And thank you again for those who tuned in on the free Spreaker app. You can hear the show live, unabated, on the Spreaker app. Just go to your app store and download Spreaker. It's free. You can listen to us live. And thank you for those who listen to the podcast version of the show on over on SoundCloud and on YouTube as well. I know some of you, we have a couple different versions of this show. That is for YouTube and for SoundCloud. So definitely check that out. Thank you for tuning in at the CHT on Sports and at Matt Long Sports and at JBreezy 4-2003. Check us out there. Now, what I'm seeing as far as looking at the breakdown of these teams, again, like I said, I'm giving the advantage at quarterback and at running back slightly to Alabama. Now, does that advantage, is it going to change the game? I think at quarterback and running back, those are game changers for Georgia. And I think in a lot of ways that gives them in this game and puts them ultimately at the end of the game in a situation where they could win this game. Conversely, I think Alabama is more consistent and stout. The number one run defense in the country. So Georgia, because they have those distinct advantages, they're going to have to try to utilize those areas more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how successful it'll be. It's going to be interesting to look. Does Georgia get Fromm settled down early, getting them set early? Can they start rolling? Ultimately, I think because of that, Alabama's steady, more consistent approach, I think that they will do something outside their tendency and open it up early, run in three or four pass plays, try to set up an early score. Oftentimes, whoever scores first wins, especially in championship games. Alabama doesn't go into deficit very often at all, which is where they have to come back from deficit. So, that being said, I see Alabama, drum roll, here's my prediction, that Alabama wins this game by a slim margin. It's going to come down probably to the last possession or two for either team in this game. It's going to be wildly entertaining, but Alabama edges out Georgia in this game. I think Georgia leads at one point, maybe even a half, after half, but Alabama ultimately wins. And it's not going to be, it's going to look like Jalen Hurts is a stronger passer than he is, but I think their system is building around high percentage throws for him, and them utilizing more bootleg plays for him to open up the coverage so he can get the ball into those pockets on the defense. So how Kirby Smart kind of recovers from that is where it goes. But I see Alabama winning.
Yeah, I find it interesting there that they let Alabama with the last game. I feel that I guess it would look like similar to one of the games that they had against each other in that championship where it kind of like came down to the final possession.
Yard.
Yeah, basically where, you know, Georgia wasn't able to finish. And so I guess here, it may come down to that same thing there where it would come down to a big play by the Alabama defense in order for them to hold on. For me, I give the edge to Alabama. I'm sure it will be, like, really close. I would say it would be within seven points. I wouldn't be surprised if it was more than 7 points for Alabama because of the way that their defense has played coming off the Sugar Bowl. I know that they, you know, do have the key injury there, but I just think that they've been much, much, much fresher going into this bowl season and this college football playoff, and that's really big. And so they'll have a lot of players coming off rotation on the defensive line, a lot of players on the rotation, linebackers, and in the secondary. And they'll just give different looks to Jake Brown. And I don't feel that Georgia on offense will play quickly in order to draw up the Alabama defense. I'm not necessarily saying that they're going to play conservative. I'm saying that they may be, you know, more uniform in the offense that they're going to do to where they're not going to have Alabama thrown off on defense where, you know, they're basically on their back foot. So
you think kind of the similar fate to what Clemson? I know you said Clemson was actually more conservative, but it's not same, but similar kind of fate where it's too, it's almost
it would
scripted.
It would kind of seem predictable. I mean, my thing with Alabama and how they've performed over the past 6 or 7 years plus, and in many of the games that they've, you know, had close calls or losses against were against a quarterback that was mobile. We saw that with Deshaun Watson in the national championship game in the previous 2 years. I think we saw that in the close game that Alabama had with, you know, Mississippi State. We saw that in their loss to Auburn. There we had Jerry Stidham at quarterback at sometimes. You know, they were able to run the Wildcat formation on Alabama. And so, to me, I would feel that you would have to have some type of mobile quarterback to Alabama's defense, you know, at all. And I don't feel that Jake Brown is mobile enough to throw out the Alabama defense. I know that, you know, they had like a bad start against Oklahoma on offense and then, you know, made adjustments from there. But Alabama is the team that really doesn't, if they get a lead, they really don't give up lead very easily. Like I've said before, with Jalen Hurts, he often makes the right play. He doesn't make the big play, he often makes the right play. So you don't get that opportunity to get turnovers, and if you do, you really are able to take advantage of them. We saw that in the Sugar Bowl in the second half where, you know, Jalen Hurts had, you know, a bad exchange on the handoff, ended up fumbling the ball and Clemson got it, but ended up basically going 3 and out and getting a field goal off of that, which kind of like changed the course of that particular Sugar Bowl game because after that, Clemson was not able to score at all. And if you're not able to get that type of momentum against Alabama, it's almost like you pretty much forget about it. So, for me, I say that Alabama has the advantage, I'd say around 7 points. And, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it would be more than 7 points for Alabama. I just don't see where the Georgia offense will be able to do something to throw off the defense. And then on the flip side, where the Georgia defense will be able to have the opportunity to force turnovers on the Alabama offense.
And, you know, from media day, again, just so kind of people know, up until yesterday, I'm not trying to shoot my prediction or theory down here. Up until yesterday, I honestly, the Georgia was going to win. Until yesterday. But I just want to take a sidebar to kind of bounce off what you were saying. I think, again, what I've learned over the last couple of years, being able to be at these events and hearing Saban, listening to him talk, being able to be privy to some things in front of the camera, what I've kind of learned is some of the secret sauce Saban has isn't, I don't know, and you kind of got him, great question, same as if I haven't heard anybody ask this question of Saban, because it's kind of a, and I like where you said it, kind of inferring that, and he's tough on people, he's hard, he's rigid, but maybe he's a light, he has a more lighter side that's the off field, or when does that come out? And he kind of paused, and it was a moment where he was like, it's almost like, do people think I'm some type of, I'm this jerk with people? Like, I'm just, like, I just bully them around? And he kind of re-described it as being hard on them. But essentially, more in, like, a parental way of being, you know,
exactly,
being tough with them in a way that's helping them develop. And I think that's one thing, talking about, again, all these teams, you come into a lot of high emotion. Everybody's now, they go from talking, it's trend. Media wants to talk about how do you feel about this game, what's your emotion. Like, they want to psychoanalyze people. Most of these players aren't going to tell you much, and most of the people asking the questions, even though that's their intent, to give some sort of a psychoanalytical approach to what these people are doing, they're not qualified, nor do they understand what questions to ask to get those answers in.
Mm-hmm.
So I know a lot of media people outthink the room, and I could say I've probably been guilty on it a time or two as well. But I think the secret sauce kind of he has is where he has the amount of guidance and relationship with players to where he clearly communicates to them what his expectations are, but at the same time, he tries to reduce the amount of high emotional impact on the game, because everything is not looking at this is the whole game. It's all this wrapped up. You know, we didn't get to play for a team. A lot of that buildup of emotion, that's media talk. A lot of that, you know, it's hyperbole around the event coming up. It's stuff that we talk about as media people and fans, so we can get more emotionally engaged and fall into it. But it doesn't really have so much to do with the players. Is their emotions involved? Absolutely. Are they high emotions? Yes. Is it a tense situation? Yes. Is it euphoric at times? Is it a time where, you know, that maybe some of them are new and a bit naive to the situation? Of course. So other guys more seasoned, this is more repetitive. I mean, in Alabama, there's players on the only known the end of their season is to play for a national title. Literally, because they've played in the last three. This will be their third straight national title they play in. And they've won 50% of them up to this point. We'll find out Monday where it goes from there. But I don't think if you start seeing Alabama players with some sort of emotional reaction. There's definitely something wrong. There's a crack there. And then there's going to be some hope. Steven doesn't have players play off emotion. He hasn't played off system, skill, and what they practice. They practice harder than they play. They practice harder than they play to make the playing easier. This is stuff that we see this in the NFL again. Like Bill Belichick, they practice a lot of different situations over and over and over and over and over and over again. Because once that situation comes up, it's not foreign. It's thing to draw from in their memory and preparation that they can put into that. Even if maybe ultimately isn't what works, but now they have something to draw from. They understand situations and stuff like that. And football preparation come a lot. A lot of it comes down to situational play. Alabama is really good at staying consistent with what they do, even if it's moving away from what they're best at. They always will do stuff that they're good at.
Yeah. Now, a reference to Coach Saban, it kind of like goes off of, you know, the common theme that fans, you know, many people that cover the sport of college football have a thing to say, and brought up Bill Belichick, and that a lot of people here make same with Bill Belichick. And I asked him that question because, you know, I kind of wanted him to show that he's not necessarily a hard coach on his players and on his system. And he responded by saying, you know, that he wouldn't necessarily consider himself as a hard coach, but as a demanding type of coach. Like, he has an expectation of what you can do and, you know, how that translates on the field. But also that he wants to help his players develop as people inside the football field, outside of the football field, inside the university, and, you know, in the community, so that they're a real rounded person and not just a football player. And so he says that, you know, if he wasn't able to reach one of his players and develop him as a person, he didn't necessarily completely do his job. And so a lot of times when you see a lot of these Alabama players, they're disciplined. Yeah, I think that's the overall theme with the Alabama Crimson Tide football program, is that they produce disciplined players that reflect off of Nick Saban's philosophy. And so if he's able to push that towards his players and that they're able to succeed on the field, then they'll be able to use that same philosophy off the field and be successful people in the university and in their community.
I wholeheartedly, I know, just so people realize, most football coaches, especially at this level, they are very interested in their players being successful. Because their players being successful helps them continue to get players to help make them successful. You know, it's a two-way street, any way you look at it. Sometimes, I know, from being in management and stuff, like, there's a lot of times where, as a manager, you learn more about managing the people and how to do the job better from situations you run into with boys versus, you know, the manager has all the answers. And I don't think Nick Saban is that. Like you said, he's demanding. But where greatness is wanted, is desired at them, a lot is going to be demanded of you. You know, if you want to be great, you've got to give great effort. You can't give good effort to be great. So I think what he does, again, he insists on coaching the defensive end. So whereas a lot of head coaches will kind of march around practices and kind of oversee everyone, Nick Saban specifically oversees the defensive back. He, the corner is the cornerback. He coaches them.
Yeah.
That's his position. He's a head coach and a position coach. Some coaches do this, some don't. Some are coordinators, so everybody kind of does it a little bit different. But I think it isn't because he's a perfectionist, because he enjoys doing it. And if that was something you'd have to give up, I know Jeremy Bruce said if he had to give up being a defensive back coach, a cornerback coach, he probably wouldn't do it anymore. So I will talk on Tuesday's show because inevitably, that's happening after this game, but inevitably, everybody stops working. They retire. Very successful. Some because they have to. Obviously, in the 70s, he's closer to retirement than not. So that is an overstatement. But I will paint on Tuesday show the exit of Nick Saban in college football, a timeline, why I see it happening this way. So make sure you tune in Tuesday's show of the Cold Hard Truths on Sports. Again, 8:30 to 11:30 every Tuesday. Get it on Blog Talk Radio and on the Spreaker app. You can download for free.
Yeah, in reference to Nick Saban, him being closer to the end of his career, I wouldn't be surprised if it happens very soon, particularly with, you know, this game here. If they're able to, he would have 6 national championships. And, you know, that would be the most national championships from a coach pretty much in the year. And he would, you know, easily go down as, you know, the greatest head coach of all time. And with that accolade placed on him, it would almost seem like, okay, that's it. I've done this. What else is there for me to do as the head coach of Alabama? You know, there's, you know, nothing else out there for me to do. Unless it be like stays there and gets 1 or 2 more national championships and puts himself at a level that, you know, very few people could reach in their coaching careers, then I don't necessarily see him doing, getting to a point where I've done everything that could be done in college football. So what else is left? And, you know, now I just see his tail end or his retirement coming very soon.
Well, I'll share how soon I think it's about to. But that's pretty much going to wrap it up here for this special edition of the Cold Hard Truth on Sports radio show. Be sure to tune in Tuesday again from 8:30 to 11:30 on Blog Talk Radio. Also available on the free Spreaker app. Go to your app store, download it. If you're watching here on YouTube, definitely go down below, subscribe to this channel. You can see the video version, or you might be listening to the audio version. We have 2 different versions that go out. Follow us on SoundCloud as well. You can listen to the podcast version there as well. And then do you have a show tonight?
I won't have a show tonight on the Golan Media channel. I usually do, for those who don't know, I usually do a boxing radio show every Sunday night at 7:30. We'll be resuming that particular show on the 14th to preview upcoming boxing matches that will kind of start up the week after. So, the Boxing Tours radio show will be on Sunday, January 14th. Except,
wonderful. And that's all for us here. I appreciate all of you who listened in, who you are, where you're listening from. We appreciate you here. Head on over to the website, thechtonsports.com. Follow us online at thechtonsports. And you can get me at that. That's all. Yeah.